Thanks for joining me, Jisuke, right here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hope you had a fantastic weekend and your Monday is off to a great start. I don't think I need to remind you, but just in case, Valentine's Day is this Friday, so be sure to be thinking about your sweeties and all the Valentines that you need to buy. Did you know that Valentine's Day spending is expected to total $27.4 billion this year? The average consumer plans to spend $196.31. But telling us to think before we spend is Elise Glink. She is our real estate and personal finance expert, and her website is called thinkglink.com. Hi, Elise.
Hi, G. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Surprised by how much people are going to be spending on this Friday. What do you want us to know?
Well, first of all, it's interesting what people are actually going to be spending that nearly $200 on. So half of it is typically gets spent on spouses and significant others, a little over $100. Then some more spent on family members, if you have children, and a little bit on friends. Sometimes you're buying them chocolates or coffees, your children's classmate and teacher. Do you remember giving Valentine's
yes.
out when you were little? We used to do those, and you'd get the little sweethearts on them. And so you've got, and then even people are spending money on their pets for Valentine's Day. So it's, and that's interesting on its own. 30% of Americans will buy a Valentine's Day gift for their pet this year, the highest figure in history.
And you're saying that the numbers and the amount of people, amount of money people are spending, it's up this year.
It is. It's up significantly this year. It's even up individually. So like pet spending alone is up from 17% in 2010, and now it's 30% of Americans buying gifts for their pets. But what's interesting is what people are spending their money on. So they spend it on jewelry, an evening out, clothing, candy, flowers, gift cards, and greeting cards. $1.3 billion is spent on greeting cards, but they're just as happy to buy them at a discount store as they are full price.
This is why immediately after New Year's, you start seeing the Valentine's Day cards and everything in the stores.
It is. It's absolutely one of the, again, these specialty holidays are a place where you might call them a manufactured holiday, right? That mm-hmm. people end up spending a lot of money. It's a little bit like Halloween when we talk about the billions of dollars people spend now on orange lights and hanging things from their trees. It's almost like Christmas Junior.
But you're saying we need to think about how much we're spending, especially when there's so many U.S. adults that are worried about their finances.
I am concerned how much people are spending on these other little holidays and all the other things that we're doing. In fact, the Wall Street Journal called out today that American employers are spending even more money on financial wellness programs like my own company, Best Money Moves, for their employees because they too are worried about the numbers of people borrowing to their 401ks just to make ends meet. So yeah, I do worry about it, but you know, the bigger issue to talk about is when is the last time you had a conversation about money with your sweetheart?
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on to that thought, Elise, because you're going to give us some info on that and then also a few tips on how to save money on a gift for your sweetheart this Valentine's Day. Wintrust Business Lunch, G here, joined by our favorite real estate and personal finance guru, Elise Glink, who is telling us about things we should be thinking about, especially in light of Valentine's Day coming up this Friday. Elise, you say it's very important to talk to our partner about money and finances.
You know, it's one of the things that we seem to forget we need to find out, especially before you make a long-term commitment to somebody. But you do want to understand they're not just that they have debt or they don't have debt, that their credit is good or it's not, but you want to understand they're thinking about how they spend and how they give gifts and how they think about giving gifts is a big clue.
Elise, you have a great list of tips on your website, ThinkGlink, along with a lot of other resources and articles you write, thinkglink.com. But one of them is 10 tips on how to save money on Valentine's Day this week. So can you give us a couple of them?
Well, for sure, the best thing that you can do is a homemade treat or a do-it-yourself gift. And these are things that even I do. Experiences are a great way to really make something memorable, a memory that just stays with you a lot longer than that box of chocolates does. Not, you know, unless like me, it goes to your hips. So that's another story. But, you know, understanding how you create these memorable moments, the moments that matter, how you create homemade gifts that are much less expensive, but really come from your heart. Those are ways to save money, but make a memorable day out of the whole thing. In fact, I'll share with you what we're doing with our son this weekend. On Friday night, we told him to come on over and bring his friends, and we're going to do a big homemade pizza night for everybody, and we'll make heart-shaped pizzas.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think gifts, you know, made from scratch, they're given from the heart. You do keep them in their keepsakes forever. And then it's a good conversation starter. You know, I made this myself because I'm trying to save a little bit of my money. So that can spark the conversation you have with your partner.
It does. And you really want to have that conversation. And I know it's hard because they might think you're asking, well, who knows why your partner might think that you're asking about money. But the truth is, if you're willing to share things, how much you earn, how much debt you really have, both credit card, student loan debt, and what is your plan for paying that off? If you know what your credit score is, you're willing to share. Those are ways for you to get deeper and have deeper levels of trust with the person you hope to spend a lot of your time with. So I encourage you to take the leap and start asking questions.
Always great advice. Thanks so much to Elise Glink, CEO of Best Money Moves. Go to her website, Think Glink, and that's glink.com to get more resources and also find out about these other tips that are really good. Happy Valentine's Day, Elise.
Thanks. You too, G.
We'll see you next week. All right, joining me now is Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis, both of Chicago Inno. How are you doing, guys?
Hey, G. Hey,
happy Monday.
Catherine, welcome back. You were on vacation last week.
Yes, I was in Costa Rica catching the sun since it's been so absent from here.
Yes.
It was a great time, but great to be back.
Well, we definitely missed you. Something you missed out on last week is that Jim really doesn't have a heart because he was the only person that I talked to that didn't enjoy that Google commercial. I don't know if you got to see it.
About yep, I saw it.
Loretta. It was an elderly gentleman who lost his wife, and he was having some memory issues. And he was remembering through Google wonderful details about his wife that was super touching. It made everybody misty-eyed except for Jim. But Jim, you say you're going to make up for it this week.
Well, to be fair, I think that it was an effective commercial. I think for a lot of reasons it worked. It was on everybody's kind of best commercials of the Super Bowl list. You know, as every commercial during the Super Bowl is super weird and irreverent, it was very touching. And I think it's for those reasons.
See, it's qualifying now.
It worked really well.
That's okay.
The problem I had with it was that it just kind of is an example of how comfortable we're all getting with giving Google our most intimate, sort of precious information about our personal lives. And in that scenario of Loretta, like that gentleman, it worked really well for him, but didn't love this whole idea of how comfortable we're all getting with that. Now, having said that, Google debuted an ad last night during the Oscars, which I actually really loved. And if you watched last night's show, you probably saw it. It was basically, you know, kind of showing how you can use Google Maps to find specific locations from some of the most iconic and favorite movies that you have.
Now, they made news last week because Google Maps got a new look and rolled out new features. Was this part of a new feature, or is this just a hidden feature that maybe a lot of people didn't know about?
I mean, I think this is an ad to generate awareness, too, about Google Maps and about the new kind of redesign that they're able to do as well. But I mean, you know, what I liked about this ad was, first of all, Google Maps is maybe, you know, the most, you know, revolutionary, important tool that Google has maybe ever developed. It's the tool we probably all use, and it's something that we're all super thrilled to have. And being able to kind of showcase some of its quirky side, I think, was really important for some people, right? You see these iconic scenes in movies, and when you're visiting these cities, sometimes you want to pop in and view these places yourself. And I just liked how kind of fun and lighthearted the commercial was, and I liked the kind of the message it was sending. It's like, hey, use this tool to improve your visit to a certain city.
So you can use the tool, though, to find the exact location of a spot in a movie that's iconic.
Exactly. Like, an example was the parking lot in A Star Is Born at the beginning of the movie when Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga are, like, singing. You know, you can find that exact parking lot. You could find where they were shooting Jurassic Park. So, you know, it's kind of these iconic movies and being able to go to those places and be like, here I am, and maybe have an Instagram moment, I think is kind of what people like about it.
And Catherine, for the record, did you enjoy the Loretta commercial?
I did. I thought it was touching. I understand Jim's concerns.
Yes.
I mean, our data's everywhere.
Very
you know,
true.
Apple and Google know everything about us, but what can you do?
Okay, so moving on to some great hiring news. Jim, there's a Silicon Valley tech company that's going to be hiring here locally?
That's right. So just last week, it was announced that Affirm is opening an office in Chicago. So Affirm is a Silicon Valley company launched in 2012. And what they are able to do is allow you to kind of purchase sort of big ticket expensive items in monthly payments. So think mattresses, trips, kind of larger items where, hey, I don't necessarily want to spend $2,000 on a mattress today. Affirm lets you make payments over smaller monthly payments.
And I'm guessing this is cheaper than just charging it to your credit card and then paying the interest rate on your credit card.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's their whole idea. And they kind of embed their payment technology right within the websites of some of these retailers. So kind of working with a lot of direct-to-consumer companies. And so they just announced that they are hiring 100 employees in Chicago, a lot of tech jobs, a lot of engineering roles in Chicago. And it's actually a company owned by Max Levchin, which is a former founder of PayPal.
I was like, tell us why he's important.
That's right. So he's actually a former Chicago area native. He went to the University of Illinois. So this is a bit of a homecoming kind of for him. He's bringing his company here. This is their fourth office in the U.S. now. And going to have about 100 people hired by the end of the year.
And I forgot that he launched PayPal with someone very famous.
Elon Musk.
I forgot that that's how, you know, Elon Musk was also made a lot of his money.
Totally. And they call that sort of founding group the PayPal Mafia, quote unquote. So basically there's, you know, it's a sort of legendary Silicon Valley story of the PayPal group, which has all made millionaires and billionaires out of a bunch of guys like Peter Thiel, for example, Elon Musk and Max as well. So Max has gone on to do a bunch of different businesses and Affirm is his latest.
Well, fantastic. Glad that he is coming back. And you said he was a University of Illinois grad.
That's right.
Fantastic. Okay, so Catherine, you have some digital health news.
Yeah. So Health Champion, they are a local startup that basically wants to make it easier for you to keep track of your health and particularly your medical records. So, you know, when you go to the doctor, if you have gone to several, that data is spread out across all those different providers. But what Health Champion has done is created an app that automatically aggregates that information and puts it nicely into a phone app for you so that you can monitor it yourself. And it really kind of gives the patient more authority over their own health and, you know, what that history looks like.
This is fantastic because this is one of my pet peeves when I go to the doctor and I go to this specialist for this, I go to this doctor. And even sometimes when they're within the same hospital, they're not communicating.
Exactly.
In a way that I would think is very efficient. So it's great then that you have access to your own files instead of filling out something and requesting the file and paying the money to get the copies made.
Exactly. And so, you know, Health Champion, they're still in kind of the early stages. They're really trying to get their consumer use base up right now. But the next step is to partner with B2B clients. So like the Northwestern Memorials and getting them to kind of advertise this to their patients and then use it throughout the hospital or throughout the health system so that it's a seamless experience for both the doctors and the patients.
And B2B, you mean business to business?
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, business to business is like, you know, this company working with a hospital as opposed to a patient or an individual consumer.
And they have enough money to make sure that they are able to make all of this happen?
So sounds like it. They have $4 million in seed funding, and they are using that mainly to get the tech up off the ground. But they also just opened a new Chicago office in the Loop. They employ about 20 people right now, but plan to double that headcount by the end of the year.
And if I want to use it, how much would it cost me?
So there is a free version and a premium version, which is often what we see with these kind of apps. But the premium version is about $10, so not too much.
Well, a lot more coming up. Wintrust Business Lunch, G here. Hope you're having a wonderful Monday so far. Joining me is Jim Dawkey. He's the senior editor at Chicago Inno, and Catherine Davis, who's the associate editor at Chicago Inno. And they bring us really cool startup and innovation news every week. We're so glad to have you in studio.
Thanks, Jane.
I am somebody that shops at Foxtrot, but in case people don't know what Foxtrot is, can you explain it?
Yeah. So back in 2013, Foxtrot launched as a sort of food and alcohol delivery business. So
wonder why, right. I'm a customer.
Yeah. So like they were, you know, kind of one of many sort of alcohol and food delivery services that kind of operated throughout Chicago and kind of throughout the region. And, you know, a few years ago, they realized that there was an opportunity to kind of start a brick and mortar business as well. And so
And they're only in the city, right? They're not in the suburbs.
Right. So they're just in Chicago, also in Dallas, and expanding to Washington, D.C. And so they have about 7 brick-and-mortar locations in Chicago. And so basically what the sort of retail store is able to do is, one, as act as a distribution site for the online delivery, so that all the goods are able to be there at the retail facilities. And then they've created these like very kind of bustling, cool community hangout spaces. So the retail stores won't just give you an opportunity to buy, you know, wine, spirits, food, but it's also coffee shops, places to hang out.
Well, why I enjoy it, I have to say it's fancy. It's a fancy little grocery store, and it's a little pricey too, because there is great decor. You can hang out there. It's a mashup, like you said, of a wine bar plus a coffee shop, and you can work there. But I like the little individualized portions that you can buy. So if you live alone, it's a great place to shop, because you don't feel like you're wasting, because you can just go in and pick up a protein that's already cooked, a piece of salmon, and then add it to a salad that they have there too. So I think they have the person that maybe is living by themselves in mind, which I think is a great thing.
Totally. And the, you know, what's interesting about their business is they've been able to kind of grow and scale kind of like a software company. Mm-hmm. So they just raised $17 million last week, which is a nice little chunk of change for a Chicago startup. And, you know, they're just really a business that you don't see typically funded in the city, right? You see a lot of software businesses get that kind of funding.
Cash,
and so what they've been able to do is get investor buy-in for a brick and mortar retail business. And so I was talking to the founder when we wrote the story, and actually it's interesting, they do about 50-50 of their business both in store and online. So the online business is still thriving as well, but they've been able to grow this retail business in really interesting ways. And they're going to open up another location in Streeterville in the spring and expand to Washington, D.C. So 2 stores coming to D.C. in the spring.
What do you think is in their secret sauce, Jim, that makes them so successful?
I think that it's part of that, their curated selection in store. So they make their in-store experience really valuable. They also have developed this loyalty program, which is really neat. So if you join their loyalty program, you get free delivery on the online side and you get free coffee in the retail side.
I'm not part of this program. Got to join.
So the loyalty program, I think, is a really beneficial experience if you're a heavy Foxtrot user. So it helps. They're finding that a lot of their business is actually their customers are both in-store and online. So it's this sort of, you know, quote-unquote omni-channel approach that they're able to do, and investors are buying in.
It's great that they're able to keep both sides of the business going, because usually when one focuses on brick and mortar, then the online tends to falter a little.
Totally. And look, you talk about the retail apocalypse, and they're adding, you know, retail store, you know, seemingly every few months. So really interesting business model.
So surprising. Talking with Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, and Catherine Davis, associate editor at Chicago Inno. You've got some great news about women and VCs.
That's right. So AllRaise came out with some data that shows that in 2019, there was a record number of women becoming venture capital partners throughout the country. That number was 52, up from 38 in 2018. And so that's a pretty large jump. Because San Francisco is kind of tech capital, a lot of those female partners are located in the Bay Area, and then followed by New York. But then Chicago was the third city with the highest number.
Yay, Chicago!
Yeah, of women being promoted to partners.
How would you describe the VC world? It's not a place where there's a ton of women leading VCs.
Right. It has, you know, historically been very male dominated, just like many other industries. But, you know, I think lately there has been more of a push to get women into the tech sector and into the investing sector as well. We've seen that in Chicago. There's groups like Chicago Blend that specifically focus on diversity in venture capital, and they have a lot of great data on where women land throughout the VC kind of hierarchy.
I think this is great news because of the different perspective a woman has versus a man. Businesses and startups that maybe wouldn't get a look actually get some funding.
Totally. And especially for startups that are working on products that are targeted for women, right? I mean, that's half the population, right? And there are startups that are you know, trying to grow really fast and target that section of the economy. And then they're trying to get funding from VC firms that don't have a single woman able to provide their insight to investing. So I think it's a huge, huge issue and something that is luckily improving.
And do you think that it's going to continue to improve?
Absolutely. I mean, that's certainly the trend. And I think that, you know, one thing that you're starting to see a little bit is from the startup side that, hey, you know, there's so much option to take venture capital dollars that some startups are saying, hey, we don't want to take money from a firm that doesn't have a woman who's part of their partnership, right? So their startups are able to be a little bit picky and say, hey, we want to work with female partners.
Guys, I think 2020 is going to be a really great year for Chicago to be the hub of a lot of innovation and tech and VC and growth.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, just one particular person that comes to mind is Samara Hernandez.
Mm-hmm. Love her. We actually had her on the show.
Oh, cool. Yes. Awesome.
Because you guys enlightened me and we knew about her through you.
Yeah, she's awesome. She was a former partner at Math Venture Partners here in Chicago and then recently launched her own firm, Chingona Ventures. And it's, you know, the idea is to invest in women and in diverse people and with diverse ideas.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for being here with us. This is Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke, both with Chicago Inno, and the website?
ChicagoInno.com, and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
And you can read all the stories. You have articles on all the stories that we talked about today.
That's right.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. A lot more coming up right here on WGN Radio. Wintrust Business Lunch, G here, now joined by WGN Radio's very own Amy Guth. We're going to talk some trending business stories. We've got some airline stories.
We've got airlines. I understand you've got chicken.
I do.
Lots of things are happening. Where do you want to start today?
Let's do local Midway.
Okay, let's do Midway. So basically, Southwest props up Midway more or less, right?
Yes.
Because there's so many flights in and out of there. It's a major hub airline or airport rather, but the number of flights fell 5% in 2019, dipping below 200,000 for the first time since 1999. That is all according to FAA data. And so what we're looking at is, hey, you know what? The Boeing 737 MAX grounding, here are some real impacts of this. Here's really what's, you know, what's going on. Interestingly, you know, looking at all these numbers around Midway, you think of Midway being obviously so much tinier than O'Hare, but it holds its own, right?
It really does.
It's a major economic center for the Southwest side and the Southwest suburbs. And Southwest Airlines believes, their estimate is that they put quite a bit of revenue into the economy every year here. They estimate that their economic impact on the city of Chicago and, you know, our major market area at about $8 billion a year.
Wow.
So even a little dip from Southwest Airlines and a little bit of a dip from Midway is a pretty significant number when you start putting dollar signs to it. Because think about all the things that impacts. There's people that work at Midway. Mm-hmm. There's all the concession companies. There are a lot of city workers that work around the grounds of it. There's not to mention all the Southwest Airlines employees. So it's a bigger deal that, you know, we think 5%. Oh, that's not that much. Indeed, it has a pretty big dollar sign attached to it. So that's, you know, something to watch and just kind of see as we're looking at now mid-year for recertification of the 737 MAX. A lot of analysts are still saying, well, okay, but just because it's cleared to fly in June or July doesn't mean it hits the skies then, because it's still going to have some time for pilots to retrain and other workers. So more realistically, a lot of analysts are saying we should be not counting on it until September, October. That's a long time of missed revenue, especially for Southwest, who so heavily, like 96% of their fleet, depends on this airline, right? So, big deal.
Wow. Amy, to talk about how synonymous Southwest is with Midway, once I was on a non-Southwest flight that was going out of Midway, but because it didn't say Southwest, I was so used to flying Southwest on Midway, I went to O'Hare. I got to O'Hare,
uh-oh,
looked at my ticket, and they're like, I was like, what's going on? Why is this not here? And they're like, because you're at O'Hare and not Midway.
Were you able to change
dummy?
The flight, or did you get there in time?
No, I ended up getting there in time. But yeah, just double check, because I think Midway, I think Southwest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So. The one time I think I flew something non-Southwest at Midway, it was one of those scoot a little staircase out on the tarmac situations, because I don't know where I was coming from, but it wasn't anywhere nearby, or
really,
it wasn't anywhere big.
You feel really secure when that happens, when you're on those really tiny planes. So, yes.
Well, the problem is, if someone is going to bring the stairway to my aircraft, I need to walk out and wave, and I need a crowd, and that's just never happened, because no one knows who in the heck I am.
I'll remember that for next time.
Thank
so
you.
Definitely Southwest is feeling the fallout from the Boeing 737. MAX being grounded.
Yes, for sure. I mean, a lot of companies are. We're seeing its real impact on the ground in a lot of ways, and this is one of them.
Well, I don't know how to make this transition, but I'm going to go from that to we've talked about the chicken sandwich wars a lot with McDonald's here. We were talking about how McDonald's is now having chicken biscuits in the morning.
And then Wendy's hired a McDonald's chef to promote their the Wendy sandwich, talking about how he defected from McDonald's. It's a thing. So there's a book in here somewhere, G.
Yes, don't hate us for talking about this because you know you love it because so many people are willing to wait hours in line to get the Popeye's chicken sandwich that was happening all of last year. Jasmine, did you end up doing that?
I did.
How many hours did you wait in line?
It wasn't an hour. It was like 20 minutes.
Okay, 20 minutes is still a long time for you.
That made me, that whole thing made me change one of my rules of life. One of them is never wait in line for eggs, pizza, or alcohol. Because there's alcohol at some other bar, there's eggs at some other diner, and there's other pizza. Don't do that. But I amended that, and I added the fourth thing, like do not wait in line for a chicken sandwich.
Well, it worked for Popeyes. I mean, this was just an incredible marketing coup for them. By the way, the company stock jumped about 4% before the market opened on Monday. And also, the chain gave its numbers from the end of 2019. And it said basically that the all sales at all of the Popeyes restaurants jumped about 42% to $1.3 billion in the last 3 months of 2019.
So stock jumped on their year-end numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
I mean, chicken is a profitable business, I suppose, unless you are a big chicken purveyor. This is a story I've been following that I think is really interesting. There's a piece in the Tribune you can find about this. It came out like kind of late Friday that Tyson, big chicken purveyor there, they are cutting about 500 jobs, including some here locally as part of a bigger restructuring. Ooh. They're looking to do that. And I should say they do more than just chicken. They also do some pork and beef and all that. They're trying to do some consolidation. I think
so. This will affect local jobs.
It will affect local jobs. I don't know exactly how many, but some of them. And so it is part of a big, you know, a big cost savings measure, things like that. What I think is really interesting about Tyson, kind of circling back around to fast food conversations, a lot of fast food companies have introduced a plant-based option. The Impossible Whopper and Subway's done a deal with a meatball sub that's plant-based meatballs, things like that. A lot of eyes have been on McDonald's of, hey, what is the plant-based thing you're going to do? They tested something in one of the Canadian markets, but still, part of it is scale. There's 14,000 McDonald's restaurants, so to find one purveyor so it's consistent across all of those, that's no small task. What I think is interesting about Tyson is they were part of Beyond Meat. They were a pretty major investor. Mm-hmm. And they went away. They backed out right before Beyond Meat's IPO last year. And I thought that was very interesting because within, you know, minutes, they kind of back out and go, oh, we're going to do our own plant-based thing. And we're doing this, you know, non-chicken thing. And it's been kind of quiet for them, right? I mean, they're moving in that direction, but still hasn't been quite as, you know, as popular as like Beyond Meat and Impossible Burger and all those kind of brands. So I think Tyson, my guess is here, and this is me speculating, which I should not do, but I'm just going to kind of read the tea leaves here. It seems like they made a big bet that has not quite paid off in the way that they thought they would. And therefore, they're kind of having to reconfigure a little bit of their stuff. Unfortunately, sometimes job losses are part of that. And that is the case here with 500 jobs total, including some in Chicago.
Well, hopefully down the road, maybe that can turn around and the bet can still pay off maybe down the road.
No telling. I mean, I think it's an interesting time to watch the food industry because a lot of people are saying, hey, I want to know everything about the supply chain. Mm-hmm. I want more plant-based options. Mm-hmm. I want healthier things. I want to know about more, you know, just more details of what I'm eating. And the consumer is getting more demanding and wants to know these things, and as well they should. However, companies that have not been that transparent or aren't in that space already, I think are scrambling. So that's why you're seeing a lot of big companies buying smaller natural food companies and things like that.
And even with the protein substitute companies, people are questioning whether it's really healthier for you or not healthier for you. Just don't get folks started because they will call
I know. Yeah. That's the thing. That's like one of those topics like parking dibs that will get a lot of people calling
exactly. in. Exactly. Thank you to WGN Radio's Amy Guth for joining us for Trending News. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.